On the Nonlinear Healing Podcast, we talk about all the aspects of healing. The beautiful parts and the painful parts, too. We acknowledge that healing is not linear, and there are many ups and downs in every person's story. And in fact, we celebrate the messy parts just as much as the pretty parts. This is Nonlinear Healing with Courtney Brooke. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Nonlinear Healing Podcast. It's me, Courtney, your host. I am tuning in today from my vehicle on my commute. I'm on my way down to Connellsville to the Serenity Hill office. It'll not be much longer. I'll be commuting to this office since we are upgrading and moving into an office a little bit further down the road and much, much larger. So super excited about that. I'm running a little bit behind schedule and I was like, I need to get this intro recorded. So alas, let's go ahead and do it in the car. I mean, why not? Some of my best thoughts are happening here, so I may as well just open this floodgate and let the thoughts out. I hope the sound quality is okay, maybe even good. I did happen to find my old school Apple iPod, iPod, headphones. I associate that with the iPods. I don't even know if like most Gen Z people know what iPods are or were, but they were devices that we used to listen to music in, and they had headphones like this that you would plug into it, and they're my favorite to record with, and I found them and I have them on right now. So hopefully that means that the sound quality is going to be a-okay. At any rate, let's talk, friends. I have a message today that I want to share with you all before we jump into the interview. And the interview is one that you're not going to want to miss out on. Brigitta shares so much knowledge and wisdom. She has such a fascinating story. But before we jump in, I have some messages from my spirit team, spirit guides, different deities specifically that I've been working with lately. And I have found that all around me, I feel like there are just these little fires that are kind of happening everywhere. People's lives are on fire in many different ways and in many different forms. It's Aries season, and we've got this really intense sort of like Mars energy that's happening. It's really igniting people. I know, like, I personally just have this feeling of like, I need to be doing something. I'm not quite sure what it's supposed to be, but I just, you know, I can sense the, it's almost like an anxious, right? It's kind of like this on edge, like be prepared sort of energy. And then like things are also just like falling apart, and, it's Mercury retrograde, so we've kind of been dealing with that whole communication issues, things falling through, that kind of thing. But the message that I want to share with you all today is one that came to me actually through my recent work in connecting with Hecate. So Hecate is, of course, the infamous Greek goddess of witchcraft and the moon. And I have recently just been diving into and learning more about her, calling on her, asking for signs, making sort of contact with her. And she is a really powerful, powerful force. And during a meditation the other day, she had a message for me that she has allowed for me to share with you all. And that is that this year, 2024, is a year that is meant to both make and break us. So we're under this illusion that things are supposed to be in a certain way or continue and not change. But the truth is, the fact is that things fall apart all the time and every day. Things have to break and fall apart in order for the world to exist. This is deeper than just a pattern, right? This is actually the foundation of existence, is that things must sort of decay and fall apart or die before any life can really take root. And this is also something that's explored throughout a famous book. It's called Women Who Run with the Wolves by Dr. Clarissa Estes. I highly recommend it. It is such a good read. There's a lot of really potent information in there. I will say it's pretty dense. It's something you're going to want to take in doses. But throughout that book, she talks about the life, death, life cycle. And I really have been toying with and kind of trying to understand this idea and what this really looks like. And, you know, the message that I got from Hecate was that you must break in order to be remade, right? So even if you think about the process of upgrading something as simple as a kitchen, right? And like wanting to upgrade or up-level your physical home, things have to fall apart. Like they have to be broken apart in order to be remade better. And that same truth resonates throughout humanity as well. You know, things have to fall apart. Things have to burn down. Things have to go haywire sometimes in order for new and better things to come together. Now, this is not to dismiss the breaking part, right? So, you know, Hecate and her energy, she's like, you learn to love the breaking, right? Like you learn to embrace the pain of it. But also, you know, for me as a Christian, also Christ energy, it came up for me and said, but don't forget to love yourself and love others through it, right? So yes, of course, this is something that has to occur. You know, as awful as it is, sometimes things like war and like revolutions and those sorts of things, they do occur and they have to happen in order for things to be remade. And it's hard to go through that. And we need to honor our humanity through that experience, right? And honor what we need and what other people need. And of course, you know, the Christ energy, my Christ consciousness says supporting and loving your neighbors through that and giving in whatever way you can. But then also knowing that at the end of the day, if we toil, right, and we live in this energy of just sort of grief and sadness all the time, right, if we go black and white with it, that's my little therapist brain there, right? That's that all or nothing, that black and white thinking. Well, then we miss some of the beauty and the camaraderie, I guess, so to speak, that occurs through the breaking process. So you will find throughout your life, you have to be broken almost to be remade into something new and something different and maybe something better even. I have never met a person who I look at and I go, wow, you are fascinating and incredible and enthralling. And they haven't had a story, right? They haven't had a story. Every person that I know has gone through this process because I think it's just part of life. It is an honest to God truth. And when we don't, now to be fair, you know, we can stay in that broken state, right? Like I think a lot of times what we see and what we witness is that people just kind of fall into that broken state and they just sit there and they lay there and there's no remaking. And that's what makes people afraid of it, right? That's what makes people scared of it. But just know that there is always the potential to be remade. That potential exists as long as you breathe. It's just when you choose it, right? It's about choosing to remake yourself, rewrite the narrative, take the pieces that are left and put them together in a new and a different way. So know that every hardship and every breaking of your heart serves a purpose. I know we hear a lot that everything happens for a reason. That sounds really cliche. For me, as somebody who has a history of trauma, that doesn't always land really well. But what does land well and what does make sense for me and a lot of the clients I work with as well is it serves a purpose, right? It serves a purpose. It's not that it happened for a reason, meaning like, oh, this had to happen to all these. No, but I can take whatever it is, right? Whatever damage or pain or hurt that occurred, and I can make meaning out of it. And I can make a purpose with it. I can fulfill a purpose with it. And that's a beautiful thing. That's such a beautiful thing, folks. So I hope that message resonated with you and that you have found your own messages of comfort throughout this season. Again, I've seen and witnessed so many people just going through it. And you're not alone. You're not alone. There's a lot of people who are going through it right now. And there's something magical about even just knowing you're not alone. I believe in connection as one of the most important tools when it comes to healing, resiliency, all of that. So I am super excited to connect with you all today and to share with you Brigida's interview because I think it ties in really nicely with this message. But first, I just want to take a moment to talk about a couple of new offerings. So it's been on my heart and on my mind for a while to find a way to work face-to-face with people who don't necessarily want or need talk therapy or psychotherapy, but still want or need guidance from spirit, through me, of course. And I am finally launching my website and putting out there first an offering for EFT tapping. So for anybody who's not familiar with EFT, EFT is a beautiful blending of psychology and the ancient modality of the meridian system. It's often referred to as acupuncture without the needles. So the way that I structure my EFT sessions is we always start with talking about whatever it is that's on your mind, whatever emotion or situation that is weighing on you. And then what we do is we try to ground ourselves, do a little visualization, do some breath work together, and then I guide you through a tapping prompting exercise that is specifically designed to target and deal with whatever emotion you're experiencing. This is a really powerful technique that I have seen quite literally instant results with clients. It's very much a rinse and repeat, but the beautiful thing about it is it's so simple that once you come and you learn this technique, you'll find that you can implement it in your life with or without my guidance. So I'm excited to offer that to you all. Reach out if you have any questions about it. At this point, I think we're just going to stick to virtual. I might be able to offer in person for certain people in my personal residence. That's something that's going to be very, very limited. So certainly reach out personally to me if you're interested in that. I also wanted to announce that I am now offering private rituals for people who are interested in ceremonial type of work. Ceremony is really a blend of spirituality and psychology for me. It's all about setting intention around whatever it is that you're seeking. So this can be around releasing certain things. It can be about inviting certain things. But this is all about creating intention in a space that then acts as a catalyst for whatever this change is. I have found that these are incredibly powerful tools. I use these all the time in my life. I help clients develop their own rituals and things. And now I'm excited to actually offer where I can design it for you and guide you through it yourself. So this is something that right now we're going to be offering virtually and in person. This is extremely limited. So please reach out if you're interested in that. All right, folks. Well, let's go ahead and switch gears here and talk about our lovely guest today. Today's interview is with Brigitta Visser. She is a light empowerment coach, a soul configurator, and a bit of a galactic kite surfer. She's the founder of Power Soul Healing, and her message is one of resiliency and empowerment. Brigitta is somebody who certainly has been through it and has experienced some of the hardest parts of life. And over again, I find that light workers have. So get comfy and tune in for Brigitta's story of nonlinear healing. Welcome, Brigitta, to the Nonlinear Healing Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Courtney.
Well, I am so intrigued by your story, and I can't wait to jump into some of this light empowerment stuff. But before we get there, I'd love for you to start all the way at the beginning and set the stage for our listeners to learn a little bit more about your background.
Well, I was born on a sunny Tuesday on the 25th of June, 1974. And, you know, my childhood was actually pretty, pretty good up till the age of 10. When we lived in Singapore, Malaysia for several years. So I grew up there and then partially back in Holland. But, I will say something a little bit about my background because I'm a bit of a mutt. And I say that because my dad was half Dutch, half German. My mom is very dark skinned. She is Indian, Indonesian with a blend of Belgian and a splash of French. So, you know, and then you've got me, a mix of everything. And, but my childhood after the age of 10 wasn't as rosy. I mean, I was assaulted, I'll put it in a nutshell, because, you know, we all go through trauma of sorts in our lives. And these experiences, these traumatic experiences are not meant to taunt us. They're meant to help elevate our awareness and to heal the hurt that we've pent up inside of us. But growing up in the 80s, life was very different. I always say this because it's such a vast contrast between then and now. You can't even compare it. But yeah, a friend of the family assaulted me. And I didn't even tell my parents at the time. I didn't even know how. And it wasn't only that, I had these weirdos, even on the street, just, you know, what you call these flashers. And I just ran from them. And they would say, well, I know your father. He does this and that. And then at school, there was the same thing. And my sister and I were taught Bahasa Malay in Kuala Lumpur. And the teacher just, you know, touched my legs all the way up when he was checking my exercises. My sister saw this, told my parents. And for a child to have to write everything down, because the dean asked me to write everything down, or the principal. And, you know, the teacher got fired and I felt so bad. I felt like it was my fault, but I was 10 years old. What do you expect? Wow. And that stayed with me for a long, long time because that was traumatic too. And it wasn't only that. I mean, life was very different. The culture was very, very different in both Singapore and Malaysia. And I love the fact that we wore school uniforms because there was no differentiation. And, you know, people got caned at school during that time still, and one of the schools, and my parents were, oh, they were so against it. Of course they were. And, you know, at the age of 14, we just moved back to Holland and my father passed away. He didn't take his medication. And I always say this, was it suicide? Well, he was tired of life and he suffered from cognitive heart disease. And so one day he went cycling and he just fell off his bike and took a last breath and that was it. You know, he was 44 years old. But being 14, that was really, really hard. It just knocked me for six. I think it knocked us all for six. And my mother had to raise two teenagers, and that wasn't easy because my father had left her with a debt with absolutely nothing. And so we stayed at my grandmother's for several months until we were placed in a council home. And oh my gosh, I remember the floors were creaking so badly. And my mother was actually our neighbors, one of our neighbors. They were terrible towards my mother because my mother was the only one in the building that told them not to do labor in the middle of the night. They were working and doing DIY stuff in the middle of the night. And
Just to
so, but
clarify, and this is might just be me, but I'm not quite sure what a council house is. Can you describe
oh,
that for those of us who aren't
yes.
familiar?
Yeah, this is what we call it here on this side of the pond. But it's those that are, oh, how would I say that? On benefits, even though my mom was working, but she wasn't making the minimum wage because she was working part-time. So
So
it's
it's,
like, is it Social Security? Is that what you call it in the States?
I believe what you're describing would be like a Section 8 or subsidized sort of housing, housing that's paid for through
Yes,
the
correct.
government.
Yes,
Okay.
that's it. We got there in
Yeah.
the end. And so we moved somewhere else. And, you know, it was tough. I mean, my sister and I mean, at the age of 15, I started working part time, and my sister was 16. But I was also bullied in high school because I was very tall. I was 5'11", and I was very, very skinny. And I was a pro at starving myself because I was very insecure. And even, you know, the guys in school, I was so fearful of them. It was ingrained within me because I didn't heal. And I always say this, one bit of trauma creates another bit of trauma because you're not healing it. And even in the modeling industry, because my mom wanted to put me on this modeling course, you know, just to crick up my confidence. Well, that didn't work. Oh my goodness, that didn't work. I was still walking around like I wanted to be invisible. You know, I slouched very, very badly as well. And a hairdresser picked me out for a show, and my long hair went into like a pixie cut, and I felt horrified. I felt so ugly, I could cry. And I mean, you know, I did the show, but it wasn't for me. It wasn't really for me. See, the modeling industry is very, it's very egotistical. There's so much, you know, backstabbing. It's like a cattle market. And I was very naive. I was very soft-hearted, so to speak. You know, I never dared to open up my mouth. And agents would go through my book, my portfolio. Nowadays it's done online, and they flick through it and they just take my set card and they'd be going next. And that's how it always went. But I was also, when I was out in New York, because I traveled the world, I was assaulted in the modeling industry. And it would have been his word against mine if I'd gone to the police. And I just bottled it up. And because of everything that I went through, I rolled into very dysfunctional relationships because, you know, I was a broken bird. So what did I do? Well, I picked out other broken birds because I wanted to fix them up rather than looking at myself. And that took me many, many years. And it wasn't like I wanted to leave them. I was very, in that sense, I wanted to make it work, but it's because it was like I was playing Houdini with myself, because the only thing that kept me going wherever I lived in the world, because I lived in Istanbul, in Germany, New York, Miami, even St. Petersburg, where I bought a home. But it was the only thing that kept me going was work. I could work like a maniac wherever I was. It doesn't matter where you put me in the world, I would work. And the other thing was, I was a pro at starving myself because that was something that I could control. And my epiphany, well, my first epiphany came in 2009 when an ex of mine, he's doing very well now, by the way, he was a I would say like a part-time crack addict in Holland. He was actually American, and he was in bed with the Dutch Crips, and they threatened my life. They kidnapped him, and I had, in short, I had to help out the police in Holland, and I saved him actually. I helped the police, and they deported him back to the States. And my mom had taken me out of Holland at the time, and I tried to take my own life, very lame attempt with a box of ibuprofens. And I thought to myself, the next day I woke up and I thought to myself, do you know what? I cannot go on like this anymore. I need help. So I went to see a counselor, and all the counselor said was, oh, Brigida, actually, you know what? You're strong enough. You'll be fine. Well, what the hell was I going to do with that?
What a
And
terrible
so,
counselor.
this was on the stage, and it was, and I to this day, Courtney, I actually remember what she looked like. And she was actually elderly, but that doesn't matter. But she was just listening to me, and I'm sitting there for like an hour talking, and that's all she said. And I just got
Wow.
up after that and I left. And I thought, you know what? I'm going the holistic route. Because throughout the years, I'd always been very interested in spirituality because my dad was a Rosicrucian. So Rosicrucians were the likes of the Ascended Master Saint Germain, Kutumi. It stems from ancient Egypt, and the mystery schools. But at the time, I had no, prior to my dad passing, I had no idea what that was all about. It was years and years later when I rolled into channeling. And that was actually in 2016, and I do remember that. But what happened in Holland was a catalyst to commencing to heal myself, and I rolled into Reiki. I'm not one to sit in that victimhood, to remain in that victimhood, because I very, very much believe in healing and progression. I think that's so important. I think it's so important to take responsibility for your life, rather than pointing fingers, because as you are well aware, many people like to point fingers. Yes, but it's his fault. It's her fault. No, it's got nothing to do with me. It wasn't me.
Yes.
And
And I'd love to just pause on that for a moment because I too have found myself after my trauma needing to go more of a holistic or spiritual route. And I guess I'm curious around like when was this period for you? Was this in like the 90s? Was this in the 2000s?
It was in 2009.
2009. Okay. So, to hear that that counselor told you, oh, you're strong enough and all that, it saddens me. I'm a counselor, so I'm a therapist and I'm an integrative practitioner. So I use both spiritual tools and approaches, non-traditional sort of like EFT and, Reiki
Love
and
that.
things like that. And it really saddens me to know that those sorts of practitioners existed because I think they probably gave people really bad taste when it comes to mental health.
Yes, you just touched on EFT, the emotional freedom technique, and it's such a powerful and yet very simple technique, but it gets rid of the emotions within the experience because you tap it out of your system. And because you repeat that and you've got a score for it, it's been very powerful because I'm an EFT practitioner as well, and I had quite a few clients in the past who suffered from, mostly it was really funny, it was alcohol abuse or it was childhood trauma. And it's amazing the results that I've seen with it.
Well, I think for a lot of us who have childhood trauma and things like that, there's a great book by Dr. Gabor Mate, When the Body Says No, right? And we store a lot of that trauma in our bodies. And the denial or the repression of emotion or trying to cover it up with drugs and alcohol and those sorts of things, it doesn't actually get the feeling to go away. Like the emotion is still there, it's just hidden.
and it's hidden deeply. So I think that using the somatic approaches, doing the tapping and things like that, it allows our body to start to release some of that in a healthy way, instead of just trying to escape it and trying to deny it.
Absolutely. Because many people, as I always say, play whack-a-mole with their emotions. They run from themselves. And yeah, many people, you know, turn to drugs or turn to anything else just to plug the holes in their cheese, in their soul, I always say, because they've better rammed their mind so badly, they've created their own dis-ease within. And, you know, they make themselves ill. And I work a lot with the Ascended Masters. So ill, according to Lord Sanat Kumara, means imbalanced of love and light, because we don't give that love to ourselves, because we reject the love. And in essence, that's what we are. We are love at our very, very core. But we've been so conditioned by society that we don't even understand what our authentic nature is anymore.
It's so true. And this is why when people come to me, I tell them, you know, I believe our natural state is wellness. And it is the world and circumstances that make us ill. So it's really just about restoring that natural state of wellness that exists in every one of us, and figuring out, how do we make ourselves feel safe enough? What do we change about our environment, or how we're treating our body or our relationships, in order for us to be safe enough to allow that part of us to come into fruition?
Yeah. And I think forgiveness is the key. Forgiveness, compassion, and understanding. Many people ask me, they say, well, how can you have forgiven everyone in your past? And I say, how can I not? I said, if I hadn't forgiven them and let them go with love, you could put me in a straitjacket in a mental institute. Mm-hmm. And I would have turned out very, very differently. And the experiences never stop. They keep coming. But because you understand what you've been through, it becomes easier to handle the experiences that are thrown your way.
I completely agree. And forgiveness, I think, was probably the most challenging part of my journey. My story is I had been abused when I was a small child. My mm-hmm. parents had separated, and I had a caregiver who physically abused me for an extensive period of time. And it was very difficult. I, for a long time, was not ready to forgive. And, you know, I do believe it's all in the divine timing. I think when we're ready to, it happens in a very natural way, where we just find ourselves less and less bitter. And I think a big part of that is coming to a place in your nervous system where you're very self-regulated, and you're able to process the emotion and release the emotion that you associate with that person and with that grief. And, you know, it doesn't excuse the behavior. What he did was wrong, but it does allow me to be able to release the anger and the resentment that I held in my heart and in my soul that really was very harmful, not to him, but to me.
Yep. Yep. And that's why it's also so important to forgive yourself. And it's not, we say forgiveness is not actually about forgetting, but as I said, you know, forgiveness is actually the key to unlocking the pent up hurt and the anger, you know, that we've bottled up inside. And we replace these, what I call these toxic mind labeled emotions, with love, wisdom, and understanding. Because how else can we perceive to grow? It's so important to grow and to develop yourself.
And if we are not growing, we are stagnant. And stagnation is ultimately the root of human suffering. The only constant in life is change. We have to evolve in order to flow with life. And stagnation, that's things like depression, anger, resentment, all mm-hmm. of those feelings like I can't let go or I can't move on. And when we do that, all we are doing is prolonging the suffering. There is an old Buddhist story around the two arrows, and it goes that life inevitably will shoot us with arrows. We're assaulted, we're abused, we're hurt. Inevitably, if we're living our life, we get shot with an arrow sometimes. Mm-hmm. But the second arrow comes from the stories that I tell myself about that first arrow. How could this happen to me? It's always me. Now this means X, Y, or Z, right? In all the stories that we make up about what it means to have been shot with that arrow. And essentially we're shooting ourselves again with a second yep. arrow instead yep. of just allowing for the pain of that moment to happen and then pass. We prolong that suffering.
Yes, we do. Because we don't know any better. And I always say, you know, our ego is like kryptonite to the soul, because we choose to hold on to all our experiences, and we throw that, or we archive that, as I always say, in the hypothalamus of the hypothalamus, that's in quantum physics, in our brain. So I call it the archives of our mind, and we store everything there, and it just becomes so overloaded, you know, that we suffer, that we commence to suffer, because we're so conditioned in living a certain way, programmed a certain way. We associate experiences with hurt. So when we go and meet someone, it's like, oops, we open the archives and oops, oh, I'm sorry. No, this is associated with hurt. I'm sorry. I cannot go out with you. And that's just very black and white.
And the world is gray, and it exists along a spectrum. And unless you open your eyes to the spectrum and you just continue with that black and white thinking, it's good or it's bad or it's right or it's wrong, then you deny yourself an important part of being human, which is to yeah. recognize that it exists along this gradient, and to be accepting of the entire spectrum of emotion and the entire spectrum of experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I was going to say, you know, it took me many, many years to heal. And as I was saying, in 2016, that's when I learned to channel, because I went through another very dysfunctional relationship. And that one was so bad as well. This person wouldn't leave me alone, just wouldn't leave me alone. I was in constant fight or flight in my head, working like crazy. I was paying his bills as well as my own. And I was just like, to spirit, I was on the floor crying often in the dark. And I said, I cannot go on like this anymore. I don't want to go on like this anymore. And they said to me, Brigitte, well, you know, if you want to exit the turnstiles of life, that's not going to work for you either. And the weird thing was, Courtney, I was teaching Reiki, because I was a Reiki master. So I had students. And, you know, I taught other workshops, meditative art, how to use the pendulum. And all the while it was like, well, you know what? I needed to heal myself. And I did. I mean, I learned to channel, and I walked through the Akashic record healing with my mentor, and Akashic record healing, that's to do with past lives. And it's very funny how energy works, because we're all energy. You know, mm-hmm. we're not just this organic, this body, but actually we're energy. We're the soul within this body, and that's energy.
Well, and I can totally relate to that, because, you know, I've had my own healing journey, and all the while I've sort of still been teaching and guiding along it. But I think that the best teachers are the ones who recognize that we are continuous students as well as incredible teachers. And, you know, too often I actually run into teachers where they think that they've learned everything and that there's no more work to be done. And honestly, I won't engage with that. I don't typically try to learn from somebody who is like, oh, I'm perfect now and everything's fine and I'm going to be good for the rest of my life. I think that there's a lot of value to being able to say that, like, I am completely immersed in this teaching and I know what I'm doing and I know what I'm saying, and I'm still learning as well.
I totally agree with you. But like I said, that's when I learned to channel. And that was amazing to me because I remember sitting in that class, in that workshop. And when the teacher, Alania Starhawk, she counted to three, to the meditation, right? And I was gone. Hell knows where I went. I have no idea. But when she counted back 3, 2, 1, I came back into the room. Everyone had a story to tell. Oh, I saw this ascended master and I saw this and I got this message and all of this. And I got nothing, absolutely nothing. Well, I can tell you, I was so upset. I was sitting in the class in the back, so nobody saw that I was trying and wiping the tears away. But there was one beautiful exercise that she gave at the end of it. And she said that one night she just sat down with a paper and pen, and she just said to Spirit, I'm ready to receive. And then she started writing. So I thought to myself, I'm going to do that when I'm home. And I did. And I think because I was so exasperated, I didn't even think. And the words just flowed. And I was just crying tears of joy because finally I thought, I'm good at something. And not that I wasn't good at teaching others, the practice of healing, but this was something completely different. And the prose that came through was very old English style in the beginning. And I looked at what I'd written and I was like, oh, this is really cool. And so when I finally told the teacher, I think 2 weeks later it was, because I started to do it every day. And, you know, it's more like when you go to the gym or when you learn to ride a bike, you have to keep practicing it. And so I showed her what I'd written. And she's like, you see, all that needed to happen was for the block to be lifted. And I said, excuse me, but I've never channeled before. And then she looked at me and her jaw just literally dropped. And she's like, well, this is amazing. And I just continued on from there. And it's not only, people always ask me, well, how did you evolve then? And I said, well, I had my tarot cards, my ascended master's cards, the angel cards. And I just picked up a deck and I picked up a card, and it could have been any archangel or any ascended master. And I just sit with them and say, well, rather than Google it, right? Not taking the easy way out. And I just said, well, do you have a message that you would like to relay? And sure enough, you know, you trust it. You have that faith. And the words for me just flowed. And it was just amazing.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but is that automatic writing? Is that the technique you're referring to?
Yeah. So I call it channeling, but it's also automatic writing. Yes.
I'm such a fan of automatic writing. I had a very difficult time, especially at the beginning, with meditation. I found it difficult to sit in my body, and with my long history of trauma, I had a lot of anxious thoughts that made it difficult to be present. I've since learned to ground and center, and I can meditate, but even to this day, I really enjoy that automatic writing. One of the prompts that I like to write around is, what does my soul want me to know today? And I will just sit, and sometimes it is some of the most bizarre stuff. And it's like, it looks like it's in handwriting that isn't even mine. And, you know, I once channeled a old ancestor of mine about 200 or 300 years ago, who was from Eastern Europe. And, she had me like draw a picture And said, this is where you're from. And it took me a little bit to figure out what it was because the map didn't look like that anymore, but it was from old Italy. So Italy, I guess, used to be much larger than it is. And the picture that she had me draw was exactly what it used to look like. And I had no idea. I had none of this information for myself, but it was to this day, one of the most incredible experiences that I've had.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah, it's very powerful, and automatic writing channeling is very healing as well. For me, it was all about my self healing at the time, and you know, I mean, now I still do it every day. Although I am going, people always think once you do all the spiritual work, your life is a bed of roses, and it isn't, because I've had to go through something recently where I've actually, Courtney, retreated from everyone because I needed to work on myself. And I'm not out of the woods yet, but I'm quietly working away on, you know, achieving my goals. And the truth of the matter is I don't need to stand on the rooftops and shout it out and say what I'm doing. I would rather progress quietly and heal quietly and work on myself than throw it out on, for instance, social media. I think social media was a great experiment when it started, and now it's all ego tripping. It's like, look at me, look at me.
I 100% agree. I at one point really wanted to sort of be an influencer, right? I wanted to have tens of thousands yeah. of followers, and I wanted to have, you know, a funnel into all of my offerings and all of these things. And I too have had to sort of take a step back, and I do use it for marketing because a lot of my offerings are in person. So I'll use it to market. And then beyond that though, I don't put pressure on myself. I let it be this, you know, do I have an inspiration? Does something come to me that I feel I want to share? But aside from that, that pressure of, well, you got to post, you know, five times a week, and you have to have four different stories every day, and, you know, or you're never going to make it as a practitioner. That is all really stemming from a lack mindset. And yes. so much of the healing journey is internal, and you can actually remove some of the magic of it if you externalize it and sort of try to put on a show.
Yeah, absolutely. I did. It's funny you mentioned that. I recently wrote about that yesterday in my new and upcoming book on my time in India. And I speak about, you know, depression. And there are times, and I'll be very honest, in the last couple of months, because I've been working literally like a dog with my corporate job, like 60, 70 hours a week, and it's not sustainable for me anymore. But sometimes we go through these experiences and it's like, hey, what are you doing with your life? And I had to step back, and it's like, this is not what I want anymore. You know, the corporate does not agree with me anymore. And so I'm taking steps to go into a different direction and a different country, you know, something that agrees with my soul. And I allow myself, you know, and I sit very quietly, and I listen, and I know exactly where I'm meant to go. But it's, how do I say that? We live in such a technocratic society that people have become very self-absorbed. That's the one thing that I've noticed. Whereas thousands of years ago, but even in the 1970s and 80s, people communicated differently with one another because it was more of a heart-based communication rather than all this social media. And all this texting, it does my head in, and I've reverted to old school.
Yes. And not to mention that we know, based on the literature, that too much exposure to social media is really, really bad for mental health.
And yes, it is.
Exactly. And it even extends to too much time on a computer, right? Too much time. And so much of the corporate world is spent just emailing and, you know, virtual meetings on Zoom and all of those things. Yeah. So I actually just left the corporate world at the end of 2022. And I entered full-time private practice where I do my own scheduling and I'm the one in charge of my time finally. So I think that's interesting that you and I have connected while you're sort of going through that journey for yourself. Yes. So why don't you just tell us a little bit more around what you do in the corporate world and what your experience has been like?
And it wasn't like this in the past because, you know, I've always had my one foot in the corporate world and one foot in the spiritual, and it's always been very balanced. But I was promoted to committee manager and the hours just increased. I was actually supposed to be off in January and I happened to be working because if I didn't take any days off in 2022 besides a few. And so I had to take all my days in January. And then I got really ill for nearly 2 weeks. I suffered a really bad flu and I was still working regardless of how I felt because I didn't want to come back to thousands of emails. And that wasn't really fair. And I think that's the one thing that's changed is many corporate companies have cut. They take on more business, but they do not expand in their staff. So everything just lands on everyone's shoulders. And that's the notion of virtual working. It's not like when we used to go into the office now, it doesn't matter because you can work to whatever time you want. That's, you know, we slump behind our desks every morning. And then I finished, you know, what to whatever time. And then, you know, my managers can say, well, you know, you need to balance it out, but then who's going to do the work? And I'm not the only one. It's many within the company. And I think this happens in many, many companies that people are suffering and they're tired. And it's all about the well-being. You know, it's robbed the joy out of me because I can tell you, Courtney, I was borderline depressed. During the weekends, I didn't even want to get out of my gym jams. I didn't want to talk to people. If people happened to ask me, which is very rare, besides my mom, I'm best friends with my mom. How are you? My response is, I'm fine. I've been busy working. Hope you're okay. Mm-hmm. No one noticed it. No one's noticed it over the couple of months, except maybe one person. Because I like to keep myself to myself. It's no one's business. No one's going to heal me except me. Mm-hmm. And it's not like when you're that borderline depressed and you're suffering. And, you know, I got up I've been getting up every single day. I'm much better than I was. And that's why I'm saying it's, you know, your whole life is like a healing journey. It's a continuous lesson. You know, you go from experience to experience to elevate your awareness and to become more conscious of, you know, what it is that you want out of life. Because this, everything in the grid, in this created artificial grid that I call, because Terra is Earth, I call it a terrarium, right? We're living in this glass box, in this artificial glass box. And we have to work in order to pay our bills and everything. And is that what life is really all about? No, actually not, because it deviates us away from the truth of who we are, our own wholesomeness, our own authentic nature. Mm-hmm. And this job robbed the joy out of me, literally killed me on the inside. And that's okay, because that needed to happen for me. I needed to know, I needed to make a choice. And so I'm now coming to that crossroads and I know where I'm headed. And I think that's the main thing. I think people need to find that happiness within themselves and do what makes them happy and do whatever brings them joy in life. It's so important to follow your passion.
Yes, I cannot agree more. I too experienced depression on and off the entire time that I worked in corporate, and I worked in a hospital setting. I always say that, you know, I've died 100 times and like a phoenix, I will rise. Yep. And that was another little death. It was a part of my life that, you know, depression, a lot of times it's a symptom. It's a sign. Yes. Where are you out of alignment? Where do you need to shift? And it was trying to send me messages. You are exhausted. You are depleted. You are unhappy. And once I started originally in private practice, my intention was to still work 40 hours a week. And I thought that I would be making double my salary because I also received a pay increase. But as soon as I started actually doing the work, I decided, no, I don't want to double my salary. I want to work half as much and still earn what I was. So I let go of that part of me that sort of needed the money to validate my worth or to sort of prove something, and have really just stepped into this state of being open to making money different ways and not just yes. through a paycheck. And it has been a journey and it requires a lot of faith, but the abundance that has come with holding that faith is fantastic. So
yeah, that's amazing. You know, Courtney, it's amazing that you've been through the same thing. I love that.
Yes. Well, Brigida, I would love for you to tell the listeners a little bit more about the specific tools or modalities that you have used along your journey.
It's so many. So, of course, there's Reiki, EFT, meditation. I'm actually also a meditation teacher. So I love I'm not sure how you pronounce his name. I always say David G, which is J-I. And I love listening to his meditations on YouTube. And it's all about anxiety, getting rid of anxiety, fear, how to create abundance. And they're like 20 minutes long and you just listen to his voice and you follow the instructions. Then I also use 432 Hertz and do the breathing exercises, where I think the breath is very, very important because we breathe very shallow. And to return to that calmness of yourself, to recenter yourself, it's really important to focus on your breath. And I always say, you know, start with the in-breath of 4, hold it for 4, breathe out for 4 and hold it for 4, and just keep repeating that. And when you're fine with that, then use the count of 8. And it's very, very powerful because you really return to that. I call that point zero within. And it just calms you right down. And the other thing, what else have I done? I studied holistic nutrition. That's helped me so much. It's helped me to listen the awareness of my body. I learned to listen to my body. And even when I was, you know, in these last few months, when I chucked myself full of Cadbury mini eggs, because I didn't want to take minutes of meetings. And, you know, my body was screaming at me and I was just like, seriously, shut up. And, you know, the rosacea had a great time, you know, popping up all over my face. But thankfully I don't do that anymore. And the other thing that I really, really love, and that's what helped me a lot, and something that I do now, is light language healing. And light language healing, people often ask me, what is that? Because people don't understand it, because it's coming from the galactics. And it's very, very healing. Your mind doesn't understand it on a conscious level, but your soul understands it. And what happens is the healing just starts. It's almost like, I always say, it's like DNA gets rethreaded, the past pops up and it just dissipates. It's very, very healing and it's very, very powerful.
Yes. So many of those spiritual tools, but also those somatic things. We are a spirit, of course, here having a human experience, but it's important that we also take care of the vessel and nutrition and hydration and breath work and movement and all of those things that help to enhance our experience as humans.
And for other people, sometimes earthing helps, where you just hug a tree or you just stand, you know, you go to the sea and you stand, you walk into the sea with your bare feet. Helps as well. There's so many things. Some people love going to the gym. I mean, I love going to the gym as well. It helps me a lot. But there are many, many things, many creative outlets as well. It's whatever agrees with your soul.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Brigida, if the listeners are interested in learning more about you, following you in your journey, working with you, purchasing your book, tell them how they can do that.
Well, my book, Becoming Authentically Me, is available on Amazon worldwide. And people can find me on my website. That is www.powersoulhealing.com. And I'm also on, I'm on Facebook under Universal Light Warriors and on Instagram under Universal Light Warriors. But as I said, I currently don't do too much with social media. But when I'm up to it again, I will post as and when.
Wonderful. And any last words of wisdom, what would you tell somebody who is still along their healing journey?
Never give up. Never give up. You know, my dad used to say, yeah, this is very true. My dad used to say, there's always light at the end of the tunnel, no matter how long that tunnel may be. And I think for most people, I respect a lot of people that are on their healing journey, and it doesn't matter how you decide to heal as long as you take the steps to heal. Because if you don't, you remain as you are in that stagnant energy and your life will not improve. You know, your life does not get better by magic. It gets better when you decide to do the work, and it's well worth the ride. It's honestly, it's to return to a more wholesome version of yourself, understanding your experiences rather than remaining in that funk in your head. It's just really important. There's one thing that the Ascended Master, Saint Germain, always says: life is nothing more than a return to love. And that's basically what it's all about. So it's important to get out of the funk in your head, the joy of your emotions that you have so happily Pac-Man munched away with the ghost gang of a Blinky, Pinky, Inky, and what was the other one? And Clyde on your tail, you know, that's causing you to spin out and drown in a fight or flight mode of your experiences. So as Saint Germain says, you know, you've got to stop riddling the mind with anxiety. You've got to stop feeding it with thoughts that merely cause you to mull around in the swamp of your own crap. Yeah, is it worth it? He asks. Experience, maybe. But actually, you need to snap out of the being here, there, and everywhere, but here. Yeah, you need to start letting go of living in that sheer misery of yourself. Because life is short. And it's so important to not let life pass you by. And so whatever other people may say about you, never take it personally, because it's not about you. It's about them and how they feel about themselves. But, you know, take back that your own I am power and allow yourself not to be disempowered. And I think that's the first step, as well as forgiveness and loving others, because everyone vibrates at their own level of consciousness, and that's okay. And just to end it on that note, if you feel like you're just going through so much and you don't feel loved, then know that truly I do love you.
So true and so powerful. Well, Brigida, I am so grateful that you and I were able to connect across the pond, so to speak.
Yes.
I know that I've been inspired by your story, and I know my listeners will as well. So thank you again for your time.
No, thank you so much for having me, Courtney. I love this conversation.
Well, everybody, I hope that you enjoyed this week's interview. I know that I found myself taking with me so much wisdom that I've carried through my days. And I encourage you all to go take a look at her work, check into her books. And I would love for you to share this with your friends and colleagues that might enjoy this message as well. Thank you so much for joining us today. We'll see you next time on Nonlinear Healing with Courtney Brooke.